This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. In late April, the Department of Defense released footage of Navy fighter pilots encountering something unidentifiable.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. Oh my gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots to the west. Oh, thing, dude.
The black and white videos are grainy, and they show small objects flying across the in-flight cameras of Navy fighter pilots. The footage had already been circulating on the internet. By releasing it, the DOD confirmed the video's authenticity and that it didn't know what they showed. Last year, the National UFO Reporting Center says it received nearly 6,000 sightings in the North American skies. What does our enduring obsession with UFOs tell us about ourselves? And what do scientists have to say about the possibility of intelligent life beyond Earth? Well, joining us from her home in Colorado is Sarah Schools. She is a science writer and the author of They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here. Also with us from his home in California is Seth Shostak. He's a senior astronomer with the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute, better known as the SETI Institute. Hi, Seth. Welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much, Sasha.
Sarah, we'll start with you. Can you tell us more about just what's in these videos? There's three of them, right?
Yes, there are three videos that were taken. One of them was taken around 2004 and the others in 2015. And they show objects that, as far as we know, are unidentified, kind of rotating strangely or seeming to go fast. But the bottom line is that there's not enough context or data there for us to know what they are. And so they're kind of strange and creepy.
Yeah, and the Pentagon says the same. We have no idea what this is, right?
Yes, that's true. They have classified these videos as unidentified aerial phenomena, although they do kind of have a tricky definition of that, according to some statements they've made, that also includes objects that are unauthorized or things that are not immediately identifiable. So it's possible there's a little bit of weaselly language going on there.
Now, I just want to read, we're getting a lot of engagement, as you can expect, talking about UFOs. Jason on Facebook says, will we see more declassified information from official sources moving forward? I like to entertain the possibility that this is the beginning of a campaign to eventually inform the public of non-human intelligence outside of our planet and or dimension. Sarah?
Well, I think first, there's nothing in these videos that, you know, suggests that they're driven by non-human pilots or anything like that. They are just unidentified objects, as far as we're concerned, without any indication of where they're from or things like that. But I do think that what we're seeing is kind of an opening in government transparency about some of these sightings that and encounters that pilots have had. We have these three videos. Also, a few days ago, there were a few other reports of encounters with unidentified objects. And so, you know, I think this is a growing concern for the military, a national security concern. And so I think they're beginning to talk about it a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Now, we asked you if you'd seen the videos, and many of you had.
I have seen the videos and heard a lot of talk about them. I think we have to remember that UFOs means unidentified flying objects with emphasis on unidentified.
Notice that the UFO doesn't move at all. If it's an external object, then at the time the video was taken, we had the ability to track an object traveling very quickly to within less than a millimeter, and we didn't have that.
I think we should continue to be interested in what they are, but not go into wild conspiracy theories until we find out more.
It's just a glitch. It's nothing.
Sarah, can you respond to those comments?
yeah, there's quite a variety. I mean, I think, first of all, the level of engagement speaks to what you were saying earlier, the enduring appeal of the idea that there's something unidentified in the sky.
Yeah.
I would side with the callers who say that, you know, it's not yet time to nail down hypotheses about what they are because we just don't have enough information. And you know, there are a lot of theories for what's shown in these objects on kind of the debunking side. There are some people who say these are just conventional aircraft caught in a way that looks strange on camera. Then on the other far side, there's the, you know, the aliens are here and they're visiting. And kind of in the middle are a lot of other terrestrial explanations, like the pilots are catching airborne radar reflectors, or this is a test of, you know, some kind of electronic warfare technology that essentially creates kind of ghost images on pilots' screens, or it's just
their,
you know,
drones,
commercial
maybe?
Drones.
Yeah.
Yeah, drones. Yeah, I think drones is the foregoing hypothesis right now. Either, you know, commercial drones, you know, your neighbor flying his drone somewhere is not supposed to.
Right. Now, Seth, when you say UFO, most people think of little green men in flying saucers. How likely is it that alien life is responsible for this?
Well, Sasha, I wish I could say that this was indeed the so-called smoking gun. That
yes, give us the definitive answer, Seth, right now.
The definitive answer, yes. Well, I don't think this is good enough. In fact, doesn't it seem a little bit surprising that only one kind of camera system on one kind of aircraft is able to see these things when you consider there are 100,000 flights a day, you know, commercial flights all over the place, including in the airspace near to where these things were seen, and they don't see them. But I think that these videos do play into a very common attitude amongst those who think we are being visited, namely that if only the government will come clean, then we'll know the truth, and they are here. The truth is out there. The truth is here. That's great. But, you know, that kind of that's kind of a weak argument that they can't prove it adequately enough to put an exhibit in the Smithsonian. They're waiting for the government to prove it for them.
We are talking with Seth Shostak, senior astronomer for the SETI Institute. Also with us, Sarah Scholes. She's the author of They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Seth, here's a question for you on Facebook. It's from Tom. He says, there are tens of thousands of astronomers around the world that spend lots of time scouring the night sky, searching for things that aren't supposed to be there. So I think that if an extraterrestrial spacecraft approached the Earth, these people would know about it. And Tom adds, we couldn't keep the hydrogen bomb a secret for 5 years. How can you possibly believe that we could keep UFOs a secret for 50? What do you think, Seth?
Well, I think Tom is absolutely right. Actually, yeah. There are a lot more amateur astronomers than the 10,000 he names. And you can just do a little back-of-the-envelope calculation, and you can reckon that they cover the entire sky essentially, you know, once a day. So if there really were, you know, visiting spacecraft in our airspace, they would see it. Every week you would get a couple of reports, but in fact you don't get reports. And keep in mind that amateur astronomers are very good at seeing something that they don't expect to see, right? I mean, they're looking at the planets and something else flies through the field. They will notice that. There are also something like 770, 780 orbiting satellites around the Earth that are all looking down on the Earth. You know, you look at the nightly weather and you see some of that. Well, they are able to do a reconnaissance of the entire planet, again, once a day, and somehow they don't see these craft.
Now, Sarah, the Navy also released incident reports in response to FOIA requests describing pilots' encounters with so-called unidentified aerial phenomena. What more can you tell us about those?
Yeah, there were just recently 8 reports declassified from around 2013, 2014, and then one from 2019. And what is most interesting about these is that they are unidentified, as far as we know, but they also don't seem to be exhibiting any of the, you know, crazy flight characteristics that you would normally associate with UFOs. And most of the reports seem to indicate that the people seeing them thought they were drones, or in at least one case, a balloon. And so I think that just goes to show that a lot of unidentified stuff, even if it is causing military problems because maybe this drone is going to crash into a fighter jet, that doesn't necessarily mean it's anything exotic. It's just something that you don't happen to know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Natasha tweets, she says, yeah, I have a question. What were those things? Really, did the DOD just drop that with no list of possible explanations? And what was the reasoning behind this timing? Does it have anything to do with the launch of the Space Force? Perhaps. What do you think, Sarah?
Well, I mean, the Space Force is, becoming a thing because the military is increasingly concerned that space has become what they call a congested and contested space, where, there are problems with foreign relations out there, and they want to, kind of forestall those and make sure it's better. So if these encounters are a concern, then there's possibly some connection. I don't have any evidence for that. And also, these are lower altitude. These are not in space. These are, just in the air. But I think, as far as the timing, I don't know. And they haven't told us about that.
Yeah. Well, here's another message from one of you.
Interesting enough, my 20-year-old college student daughter brought it to my attention. And a lot of people her age were inquiring, why? Why are they being released now in the COVID-19 situation? Is it because they would be less noticed? I thought it was a good question.
Well, let me say that actually these videos were released a lot earlier, long before COVID. In fact, the New York Times had a front page article in December of 2017 mm-hmm. with these exact same videos. So, look, the military has always been interested in anything that was in our airspace that we didn't know about. I mean, there were the Project Blue Book, Project Sign, Project Grudge. For people who are into the UFO phenomenon, they will recognize those projects as investigations by the military involving a lot of academic brain power back at the end of the 40s, early 50s, trying to figure out what these things were, because I don't know that the military thought that they were aliens who'd come to Earth to, sample the New Mexico cuisine or haul people out of their bedrooms, but they did suspect that they might be aircraft from the Soviet Union that we didn't know about. So they were very interested in them, and they're still interested in them. If they're going to be flying jets around at Mach 1 or 2 speeds, they want to know what's out there.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah, what did you uncover while working on your book about the history of government research on UFOs?
Well, like Seth mentioned, there have been a number of projects starting back in the mid-20th century to find out first if these things were a national security concern. And because also, like Seth said, anytime there's something coming in and you don't know what it is, the military is obviously going to be interested in that kind of incursion. But I think what makes people mistrust government investigations into these things is that there's kind of been this ethos of, treat the matter lightly in public and kind of dismiss people's obsession with UFOs, and then have these very serious official programs of investigation that kind of lend legitimacy within the military itself to UFOs. And so that kind of disconnect makes people understandably suspicious. But in the end, those projects and another one that produced a document called the Condon Report all concluded that these were not a national security concern, and also that studying them was not really adding anything to science. And in the end, that those were the reasons that the projects were
canceled. You just told us about the Condon Report. A tweet from Jake lines with what you just said. He says, what are your thoughts on government projects like Project Blue Book and the Condon Committee, whose main function was to debunk and create doubt towards credible UFO encounters? Tell me, does Jake describe them accurately?
That is a common conception of what these programs were like. And I mean, in the past, the government has been concerned with UFO reports causing panic among the populace and, people overwhelming intelligence channels with reports and things like that. And they wanted just to keep us all calm a little bit about it. And so there were coordinated campaigns in the past to say, here's a UFO and here's an explanation and here's another UFO and here's an explanation, just so that we would all calm down a little bit. And so that's partly a legitimate interpretation.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, we invited the DOD to participate in today's show, but it declined. Real quick, Sarah, what do you make of their decision to release the videos? Do you think there's any motivation here?
I think there's always some motivation. What it is unclear to me, but I mean, they didn't release them by accident. They clearly made a decision to do it, and to do it now in the middle of this pandemic. But something that's interesting to me about this particular release is that they specified that these videos weren't declassified. They were always unclassified. So that says to me that they don't actually think there's anything particularly exotic or interesting in these, because even sometimes mundane information is classified. And so the fact that these were never that secret, I don't know, doesn't make me that excited.
Seth, do you think the government knows more about these UFO sightings than it's letting on?
Well, I would love to think that, Sasha. It's always nice to think that you understand that something important is going on, but it's not, you know, a generally known thing simply because the government is keeping secrets. But on the other hand, you also, if you want to go that route, and certainly a very large fraction of the population that thinks we are being visited does go that route, then you also have to assume that every other country in the world has a similar plan to keep all this stuff secret. And I really can't understand why the aliens would only want to visit America. Maybe it's the fast food. I'm not sure. But it doesn't make sense to me. You know, the idea that the government could keep these things secret for this length of time since 1948, 47... That astounds me. I mean, they couldn't keep Anita Hill quiet for more than a week or two. So I really doubt that if we were being visited, that you really would, you know, that would be ambiguous. You would know there would be evidence all over the place, and yet somehow the government is keeping it a secret.
Mm. John on Facebook says, as someone who has seen two UFOs at the same time, I do not question that these objects exist. But I have no idea what they are and have no possible explanation for what we saw. Very interesting there, Seth, right?
Well,
two at the same time.
It sounds like a small fleet. But I have to
right.
say, when you see something that you don't understand, all you can say is, well, I didn't understand what it was. And, you know, just as a general comment, in science, witness testimony is not very compelling. In fact, it shouldn't be very compelling, even in a murder case, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I saw that guy did it. Well, you know, sometimes that's true and sometimes it's not true.
Right, right.
And you wouldn't send somebody to the chair on the basis of witness testimony, I hope.
Right.
And this is such an important thing that if it were really true, you would have, after 60 years, you would have some evidence that scientists could buy into that would be worldwide and, again, would be stacked up for display in the Smithsonian.
Well, let's take a quick pause there. We will have more from our guests and from you in just a moment. Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom makes it easy for Americans to set up their estate plans without leaving their homes. Don't know the difference between a last will or living trust? What about an advance healthcare directive? LegalZoom can help. They're not a law firm, but you can get started quickly online and also get advice through their network of independent attorneys. Learn more about estate plans and how you can speak to an attorney for advice at LegalZoom.com.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Let's all close our eyes, take a deep breath, let it out, and listen to NPR's All Songs Considered. It's a music podcast, but it's also a good friend and guide to find joy in troubled times. Hear All Songs Considered with new episodes every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, we have been talking about UFOs, or as the Defense Department calls them, unidentified aerial phenomena. The Navy released videos last month showing mysterious objects flying through the sky. That's the first time the government has released such videos. But people have been seeing UFOs for a long time. Astronomer Carl Sagan has a theory about why.
What I suspect is happening is this. We live in very unsettled times. It used to be possible to believe in a personal, benevolent, powerful, all-knowing God who cared about individuals who you could pray to. But now there's very few people who really believe that, I think. Science, for good or for ill, has destroyed a lot of the traditional theologies. And yet people have the same needs to believe that they always did, perhaps more so because of the times we live in. Well, the flying saucer myths are a really clever compromise. It's a way of having beings that come from the sky, that are worried about us, that are powerful, that are going to step in and prevent us from destroying ourselves, as we very well might, and yet have it in the cloak of science, so that no one can say, nonsense, that doesn't match science. It's all very pseudo-scientific.
Let's put this pseudoscience aside and continue our conversation about why people see UFOs and why experts say it's better to look for aliens elsewhere. My guests are SETI astronomer Seth Shostak and science journalist Sarah Scholes. Now, I want to share with you another message that one of you left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Donica from Nevada. In January of this year, I was driving past Nevada Test and Training Range. I was taking some pictures just of the area, and in my pictures, I have a lot of objects that are unidentifiable, and my pictures in that video matches. So I just wanted to call and say, I believe the video.
Thanks for your message, Danica. Sarah, like that caller, while working on your book of UFOs, you had your own experiences of seeing things in the sky that you couldn't explain. You were visiting Area 51. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, back in October 2018, I took a camping trip out to Area 51, and it was very interesting. As soon as I pulled into the valley where it is, I saw these three orange orbs kind of hovering over the desert in the shape of a saucer. And I later realized that those were flares that jets had dropped kind of in a pattern that just kind of, it looked like a classic saucer would look. And so it really makes you understand where these ideas might come from. And then I also saw something that remains unidentified to me, although I think it is identifiable. Kind of a matrix of tiny white dots appeared and took over somewhere between a quarter and half of the sky, just in very neat rows and columns. All of these lights kind of traveled together in a fleet, I guess, and then just disappeared. And I mean, I think those were tests of something military, probably something like drones, but you know, they are unidentified to me at the moment.
So you figured out some, or you think you figured out some of what you had seen, but I want to know if that experience changed how, you know, you as a journalist now approach the topic of UFO sightings and the people who report them.
Yeah, I mean, it did really make me understand how, you know, affecting a UFO experience can be for someone, even someone like me who thinks that was a military test. Like, to see something secret that no one else is seeing that I can't explain, you know, that's a kind of thrill we don't get very often in the modern world, where most of the things we interact with we can explain in our known technology. And just getting a glimpse of something that I wasn't supposed to see, which I think is also something that a lot of people who see UFOs feel. And, you know, I couldn't identify it. And so that really made me, it helped me be more sympathetic to people who have had these, you know, long-lasting emotional experiences connected to UFOs.
Recent polls show that one third of Americans believe that some UFOs are probably alien spacecrafts. Seth, why do you think people jump to the conclusion that aliens are responsible for UFOs? And then, you know, what about you? Are you convinced that intelligent extraterrestrial life exists?
Yes, well, to answer your second question first, Sasha, yes, of course. I think they must be out there. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep the job that I have,
right,
which involves looking for them. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't look for them if you didn't think there was some reasonable
chance. You'd be out of work. I get it. Yes.
Well, yes. Yes. That is not so exceptional these days, I have to say. But yeah, I mean, and that derives from a very simple thing, namely that there are, you know, roughly a trillion planets in the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy. And it's hard to believe that a trillion planets are all sterile and there isn't anybody out there. But in terms of being visited now, that's a rather difficult proposition, even though one third of the public does believe that. By the way, you mentioned at the top of the show that the UFO Reporting Center, I think that's Peter Davenport up in Seattle, said that 6,000 people reported UFOs this year. Well, that's down by about a factor of two over what it was about 5 or 10 years ago. So I don't know. It sounds as if the aliens are losing interest in us. But there is this, and that is, if you postulate that they're here, you have to ask, why are they here now? Why are they here now? Because, you know, if they're even 35 or 40 light years away, there hasn't been enough time for shows like 1A or other NPR shows to get out into space, the signals to get out there, alert them that we're here, and for them to send their aircraft or spacecraft or whatever kind of craft back to Earth. So there's a real problem if you think we're being visited now, and yet nobody previously in the 4.5 billion years of Earth has.
So what's the time frame, Seth? When do you think, how soon do you think we'll find them?
Well, I have probably injudiciously said at a meeting in Europe about 8 years ago, I bet everybody a cup of coffee that we would find the aliens within 20 years. I still stand by that, but I'm going to buy some Starbucks stock.
Hey, Sarah, what are your thoughts? Are you convinced that intelligent extraterrestrial life does exist?
I like to think that it does, but I wouldn't say that I'm convinced. I think I might be a little more on the agnostic side than Seth.
Why?
Well, I just think that creating biology out of not biology might be harder than we imagine, and then, you know, having that evolve into something intelligent that also makes technology. I think we don't really have a grasp on how difficult that may or may not be for nature to do. And so I think I'll just, you know, luckily it's not my job to find it, so I can just wait around and see what Seth finds. Mm-hmm. But I'm undecided at the moment.
Sarah Scholes is an author. She wrote, "They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers." We'll have more with her and with Seth Shostak right after this. This is 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Facebook. It's a challenging time for small businesses in communities across the country. Facebook's Business Resource Hub offers free tools to help manage a business, support customers and employees, and connect with other business owners who are facing similar challenges. From information on how to bring a business online to setting up a customer service plan, Facebook's Business Resource Hub can provide resources. Learn more at facebook.com/resource.
There's no getting around it. The coronavirus pandemic has upended everything. And daily decisions made by the White House and Congress will radically impact the human and economic toll. To keep up with the latest, join us on the NPR Politics Podcast. We'll cut through the noise and let you know what decisions are being made and how they affect you.
This is 1A. We're talking all things UFOs today with author Sarah Scholes and Seth Shostak, senior astronomer for the SETI Institute. Now, Seth, the SETI Institute, can you tell us more about the work that you do there?
Well, the SETI Institute tries to find life, well, any kind of life anywhere, if you will, beyond Earth. And that, by the way, includes our own solar system. I don't know how excited the listeners would be about the thought of finding, for example, microbes on Mars or some of the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. Those are all places where there are liquids, so there could be some life there. And you might think, oh, well, pond scum in space, I'm not so interested. But on the other hand, if you find biology elsewhere, that immediately addresses what Sarah just said, which is, can life, you know, spring up on other worlds? Mm-hmm. Is that a very rare thing or is that a very common thing? And we'd like to answer that question. But in terms of finding intelligent life, you know, we use big antennas. We try and do what Jodie Foster did in the movie Contact and try and eavesdrop on their transmissions, their radio signals.
Ron wrote to us on our Facebook page. Ron says, back in the good old days of UFO hunting, people were always saying they didn't have a camera. Today, nearly everyone has one in their phone. Yet somehow, with millions of cameras now out there, we have not seen a commensurate increase in photos of UFOs. Perhaps the aliens realized we've entered the smartphone era and are being more discreet, but I kind of doubt it. Sarah?
Yeah, I doubt that last hypothesis also. I mean, there's one explanation, which is that when you see something that really unnerves you, even in modern times when we all have our phones in our pockets all the time, it's not necessarily your first impulse to get it out and take some data on it. You just want to observe it. There's also the fact that it's pretty hard if you've ever tried to do something like take a picture of the moon or a star field. Like, it doesn't actually show up very well. So I could see how there wouldn't be that many pictures of good UFOs. On the other hand, kind of like Seth was mentioning earlier, we do have tons of observational data from above of Earth, you know, from satellites and other Earth-observing instruments. And it's more surprising to me that those wouldn't be seeing things all the time than that we wouldn't have cell phone pictures.
Here's a tweet from Jack. Jack tweets, "Isn't there an expectation for our government to answer these questions around UFOs? Why is it expected that the burden be put on the general public?" Now, I just want to be clear. I mean, this isn't just a random UFO conversation here on 1A. We are responding to something that is a first from the Pentagon, releasing official video without an explanation. So, Sarah, any further response to that? You know, do you feel like it's our burden to answer these questions and not the government's?
That's a hard question, because I don't know if we have access to the data that would allow us to answer the question. I am always in favor of more government transparency, and I would like to see more data and more information that we have about these videos, the other reports that came out, and anything else that might exist. And, you know, there are reasons that might not happen if they are some kind of a national security secret. But no, I am always in favor of governments being more transparent.
Seth, in 2017, scientists discovered a mysterious space object called Oumuamua. People quickly jumped on the idea that it might be an alien spacecraft. What is Oumuamua, and how did people get the idea that aliens are responsible?
Well, the answer to your question, Sasha, is we don't know what Oumuamua is yet. But it's most likely, it's most likely a rock. Now, an objection, it would be much more interesting to think that if you could get up close to this thing, whatever it is, you would see little portholes along the side and, you know, some green faces behind the portholes. That would be interesting. And that possibility accords with an Arthur C. Clarke story that came out a long time ago called Rendezvous with Rama. You know, so they hollow out an asteroid and use it as a spacecraft. Mm-hmm. That's possible. And indeed, the head of the Harvard Astronomy Department has advocated that that's a real possibility, given the unlikelihood that a random rock would enter our solar system. But keep in mind, we found a second one now. It's called 2I Borisov, because that's the name of the guy who found this thing. And mm-hmm. it's also entered our solar system. So it seems like there are just a lot of rocks flying around. And whether they're asteroids or chunks of a planet, as has been suggested, we don't know, because they're pretty far away and they only appear like a single pixel dot in a photo.
Yeah. Now, Sarah, if SETI hasn't found anything, what have we learned about intelligent extraterrestrial life recently? Have we made any progress in our search?
I think astronomers like Seth have been really good at diversifying their efforts and thinking up new strategies of ways that we might come in contact with alien life. He can probably speak more to this, but, you know, there are projects looking for alien lasers and looking for more complicated signals than we used to look for, and also looking for signals of unknown type, just being totally agnostic about the kind we're looking for. And so I feel like that's really all an evolution in techniques that will help us, because, you know, we don't know anything about any alien life that might be out there. And so any kind of assumptions we make are necessarily kind of cutting down on the options that we have for who we might come in contact with. So I think that is a bonus.
Seth, can you comment on that? Have we made any progress in our search?
Well, the bottom line hasn't changed. Yeah. I mean, we still haven't found the aliens. This is a little different, by the way, than the UFO story, because the people who believe that, for example, these tic-tac videos show you alien craft are convinced that we have found the aliens. But in the case of SETI, if we were to pick up a signal, you know, you wouldn't immediately, you know, run to the New York Times and say, wow, we found a signal. You would have to have that verified by other observatories around the world. So that's a difference. In the case of science, you want confirmation by others that it's for real. But to say that we haven't made any progress just because we haven't found the aliens is a little too simple. The equipment, as Sarah points out, is, you know, incredibly faster than it used to be, and that continues to be the case. We're also doing other sorts of things. One thing you might look for are what are called alien artifacts. In other words, giant constructions that some really advanced society may have built. Because keep in mind, the universe is three times as old as the solar system.
Right?
We're the new kids on the block. So some of the older kids on the block may have built stuff that's so big, that's so impressive, that we just see it by accident.
Hmm. And if this is anything to sum this up here, here's Dan on Twitter. He says, I agree with the author. I guess he's talking about you, Sarah. He says, the aliens are already here. We call them cats.
I like that theory.
Right. Sarah Scholes is the author of They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers. Seth Shostak is a senior astronomer at the SETI Institute. Great to have you both today. Now, remember, we're on Instagram. Follow us at The 1A Show. Now, before we go, we've been doing this for weeks, and as long as you keep sending us your acts of kindness, we're going to keep sharing them. And today's story comes from Will in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
I was at the Central Main Station with the driver, other people waiting for the bus. A little girl with a very troubled face arrived, and she said, "I've lost all my money." The driver, with hands the size of baseball gloves, said, "How much was it?" She said, $125. He opened up his big hand, and he said, "There you go." And I told him he had uncommon integrity, and it made me feel so human to watch the panic on her face go to calm.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Will. If you have an act of kindness to share, we would love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. Today's producer was Avery Kleinman. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.